excited to introduce to you my good friend Val from Feminists Unite. And Val is with me right now. She is recording from home, correct?
Yes.
And I will go ahead and let her introduce her amazing self.
Oh, thank you so much. My name is Val and I use she, her pronouns. I'm a third year student at California State San Marcos, and I'm majoring in women's gender and sexuality studies with a minor in criminology. As Gabriella mentioned, I'm in leadership position at a student organization at CSUSM called Feminists Unite, which has been a great way to practice my leadership skills. And I just try and be involved in activism wherever I can, whether that's on or off campus. So I'm so excited, and thank you for inviting me to do this, Gabriella.
Of course, I'm really excited to have you on because this is a really important topic that we're going to be discussing today. And I think that there's not enough, not just podcasts, but discussion about this issue. So we'll be talking about queer representation in media and also the in the Biden-Harris administration. So I kind of wanted to start off just with an important question regarding this new presidency that we have. What are Biden's views on LGBTQ issues?
Right. So he kind of has a concerning history regarding the LGBTQ plus community. For instance, he voted against same-sex marriage, decades ago. And there had kind of been some other policies, regarding queer rights that he wasn't agreeing with. But then also at the same time, there must have kind of been this change because, gay marriage was legalized while he was in office under Obama. And he, I believe, runs this campaign called As You Are campaign, which helps families accept their queer kids, which is all great work. He is supposed to, his son Beau was working with this woman named Sarah McBride, who's a trans woman. And I guess through the relationship with Sarah McBride, I guess Biden kind of changed his mind about the queer community a little bit. So and then currently there has been some wins just even, in the first few weeks of his administration. For instance, he repealed the trans military ban. So I would say that it's kind of a mixed bag, but currently it seems like he is a bit of an ally to the queer community.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you bring that up, that he kind of flip-flopped a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he did the same thing with abortion rights. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like this, I think he's trying to change with the times and also change with the voter base.
Yeah.
Because a lot of young people, especially our generation, we are so diverse and we are all so passionate about different things. And that's why, I mean, personally, I, since the first time Bernie ran for president and I, was following all that, mm-hmm. I was on the Bernie train because he was so progressive.
Yeah.
And I felt like as a young person, I could see him being our president. But with Joe Biden at the time, when, he first announced his campaign, I was another old white guy.
Totally.
I don't know. It was kind of weird. Didn't sit well with me. But we did settle. And like you said, there's been some small wins and we're hoping there'll be bigger ones too.
Yeah, no, I totally feel the same exact way. It was definitely really sad to have my first, presidential vote go to Biden. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. So I think overall my feeling with this administration, in general, is that I'm very critical of it, but also a little optimistic that, there's going to be some good progress.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm a little bit more optimistic than I am pessimistic, mm-hmm. I was before, just because to think about the fact that, unfortunately, when we do look at presidential elections and all the presidents that we've had, they are all white men.
Yes.
So we don't really have much representation in politics, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that our generation is able to fix that. So I kind of want to segue into another important question, that is, what are queer rights under a Biden administration going to look like?
Right. So as I said, he has set out, some goals and has accomplished a couple of them. For instance, like I said, he repealed the trans military ban, which was something that Trump put into effect a couple years ago that was basically like just banning anyone who was transgender from serving in the military. And so Biden was able to repeal that, which is, you know, great. And then he also extended federal non-discrimination protections to members of the queer community. And basically those protections are going off of expanding, like, protecting, He is protecting people regarding their sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression in, like, the workplace and in other, like, places where federal law applies. Because previously there were, it wasn't at the federal level, like some states, like for instance, California, had laws against, you know, discriminating based on gender or sexuality, but it's not like a uniform thing. So to have just those two things in such a short amount of time that, you know, really is very pervasive. I mean, even just, you know, like the fact that you could be fired for, you know, being gay or being trans is like insane. So it's really, it's looking positive for that, what queer rights are going to look like. And it, on the same, you know, kind of the same things, those seem like very basic rights, like basic human rights. So it's to the point where it's like, oh, it's great, you know, I want to celebrate them, but it's also like, I definitely want more, since again, it's just like a basic thing to be protected for those types of things.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's really interesting to bring up human rights, because although we live in an extremely developed country, it's interesting to see how some of our laws and some of the people and or specific groups that we discriminate against, it's just like an underdeveloped country. I was watching Madam Secretary, which is my all-time favorite show, and I was watching an episode in which there was a underground, it was in, I believe, Turkey, and there was an underground club for LGBTQ people, and the way they treated these people when they found them was so appalling and disturbing, and it reminded me a lot of America. Yeah. Because even though that abuse doesn't exist, the abuse comes in other forms, such as, like you said, workplace discrimination. So I just wanted to kind of see, so we were talking about the Biden administration, what is it, what do queer rights look like? Do you want to talk about some of the queer cabinet members that Biden has appointed?
Sure. So he has appointed several, you know, notably like Pete Buttigieg as transport secretary, Rachel Levine, who's assistant secretary of health, I'm really excited about. I believe she's a trans woman, and I believe it may be unprecedented. Which is super cool, especially because like trans folks are very impacted by, you know, the health industry. Yeah. And then there's several other people I don't know a ton about, but there's like Carlos Elizondo, who's a social secretary, and there's Stuart Delery, White House deputy counsel, so, and a handful of others. So it's definitely kind of, as you were saying before, we don't really have a ton of queer representation. I mean, definitely not in presidential, but to see it at least in cabinet is great. I mean, the caveat, of course, is that representation doesn't always mean that it's like positive, but it is still, it is important, I think, just because it means that it's possible. It's possible to be a queer person, and it's possible to reach that level of, you know, working for the government or working for the community and things like that. So it's hard to say, I guess, yeah, the more pessimistic side of me wants to say that it's kind of just like tokenism, but I do, I am hopeful that there will be, it's like a positive thing and that it's not tokenism.
Yeah, of course. And as important as it is for young children to see women of color, or just in any case women, or any anyone else who may look like them in office, it's also important for young kids to also see, you know, queer cabinet members, because they can say, that can be me one day. So I think that's really important, and I will be sharing the links in on our Instagram, and also try with Spotify, so people can read more about what Biden, what his views are, and things like that. So, kind of going into another question, What has Biden done for queer people so far?
Yeah, I would say the two biggest things that I'm aware of is what I mentioned earlier about extending the federal non-discrimination protections and then repealing the trans military ban. I can't really think of anything else on the top of my head. But as I said, like, those are two really big steps, and I know they were both done in a very short amount of time. So it's really setting, like, the precedent that he's going to continue to be an ally to the queer community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important. And I, like I said, again, I will be sharing those, if not in a post, definitely on our story to for people to really read about these things and educate themselves and understand what's going on. So I also wanted to kind of go into the queer media representation. So what is queer representation in the media? What does it look like in recent years?
So it's not great, in my opinion. I would say that queer people, if they appear at all, which is a big if, in media, they're often very, like, over-sexualized. The narrative is almost always, like, it's a coming out story, which is important to tell because it's, you know, obviously it's something that happens, but it does get a little bit, like, tiring and obviously, like, a little just traumatic for those who have lived through a similar experience to see it again and again. I know there's been talk about kind of a similar issue with BIPOC people in media as well, where it's like almost always, you know, this terrible experience, like they come from, you know, broken family or things like that, and there's no, like, there's no joy associated with existing as, you know, a person of color, a Black or Indigenous person, or as a queer person, as we're kind of talking about currently. So I'd say that's a pretty big issue. And then a third thing that I would point out is just, like, even if there are queer characters, and, like, even if it was a great story, they're rarely actually played by queer actors, which is just so, like, mind-boggling to me. And it just doesn't really make sense. You know, there are so many queer actors out there that could easily be hired and have, like, a more authentic story, but for whatever reason, straight actors are hired instead.
Yeah. So, can you give some positive and negative examples, kind of touch upon it a little bit more? And when you talk about positive and negative examples, how can media do a better job of making, I guess, making queer representation more diverse and really portraying it in a positive light?
So I guess I can start off with the negative, which I feel like most things that I've seen are kind of negative. One very recent movie that came out was Happiest Season, came out last winter, and it starred Kristen Stewart, which, you know, that's a win already. We have a an out lesbian person playing, you know, a lesbian character. So I had really high expectations for this one. You know, all my friends were really excited about watching it, and we watched it, and it's honestly pretty hard to watch. Essentially, the premise is that, you know, Kristen Stewart's character lives with her girlfriend, and it's Christmas time, and her girlfriend really wants to take Kristen Stewart home for Christmas. And so they go to the girlfriend's house, and turns out, like, right before they get to the house, the girlfriend tells Kristen Stewart that, you know, she's not out to her family. And so the whole movie, it's supposed to be a comedy, but the whole movie is just all these, like, painful shenanigans of trying to not, you know, come out to the parents. And it's just, it almost, like, normalizes being closeted, and which is, like, it's totally fine to be closeted, but it's also just, like, is this a weird thing to discuss in the format of a comedy? So essentially, like, it was really painful to watch, you know, constantly being Kristen Stewart having to be called, like, her friend, her roommate, like, you know, just belittling the actual relationship. Yeah. And I, you know, I just know that there are a lot of people out there who have had that same thing, and, like, I've had to do that from time to time, you know, with my girlfriend, and just being like, oh, this is just my friend, you know, and it's just, it's very hard. And yeah, trying to somehow find, like a comedy out of that is really strange. So overall, I didn't love that movie. Oh, and then my one other note is just Kristen Stewart's girlfriend was, again, played by a straight actor. So it's they almost had it, but they didn't completely. And then another negative one would be the, I think it's a Netflix original, but it's called Hollywood. It came out last spring. I remember watching it like kind of early in quarantine. I don't know if you did, but I would say the queer representation was pretty negative. Essentially, Hollywood is, I believe, set in like the 1950s, and it's about the main character is this, you know, this guy who moves to LA and he wants to be an up and coming actor. And then there are several other actors involved who are also like up and coming, and they're based on real actors. So it's loosely based on like real stories. For instance, Rock Hudson, who I believe is like the main queer character, who is based off of the real actor Rock Hudson. Essentially, like, he was confirmed to be closeted, you know, gay man in Hollywood, and it was in the 50s, so like there was no way that anyone, you know, he would never come out publicly. But so Hollywood basically takes it as Rock Hudson gets this agent, and this agent is also a gay man but is also closeted, and it's just their whole relationship is super toxic, and there's a lot of like sexual coercion, you know, there's a lot of abuse. And so that's the only like quote-unquote queer couple that we see. And of course, it's, you know, important to talk about, there is, you know, of course, sexual abuse, domestic violence, etc., within queer relationships. But I just felt it was very unfair, considering you're already talking about the Hollywood industry in the 50s. You have other characters who are young actresses. You know, Alfred Hitchcock has like a small cameo, who, you know, is notoriously like terrible, you know, abusive to women. So it just felt really unfair that the only conversation about that difficult topic was in context with a queer relationship, when they could have easily talked about it, you know, also with straight relationships. So that was pretty disappointing. And then I guess like a third example is Bridgerton, which I know came out recently, so I won't try and give too much away. but there is one small queer role that just, if there's a second season, maybe it'll be explored more. Bridgerton overall is kind of just, there's so much to say about it, but in particular, the way that there was only one small like character who was a gay man, and then just in comparison, where like I feel like they had so much potential to make a period piece and make it even more scandalous with like having some lesbians or something, you know, like it was already such a like scandalized like kind of show. So just again, which I think goes back to more of just like not really wanting to center queer characters. And then just one more kind of recent movie is Love, Simon, which like I do like watching Love, Simon. It does make me cry every time. Like, I think it's really sweet, but it's, again, it's just a coming out story, and the queer community deserves more than just coming out story after coming out story after coming out story, you know? And then again, Simon is not played by a gay actor, so that's kind of, you know, he does a great performance, but it's, again, it's kind of disappointing. So those are a lot of negatives. I feel like most queer movies are just not that great. But one example that I really love is BoJack Horseman, which is also a Netflix original. It's not really necessarily a queer show, but there's a lot going on in the show, and there is one of the main characters, Todd, who, I think maybe it's the second or third season, but he realizes that he's asexual. And they have like amazing representation. There's a lot of like episodes surrounding it. It's very funny. It's really like, it's just something I've never seen, and I doubt that I will see again in media anytime soon. And I just like extremely appreciate it, because asexual people are very often let out of the conversation, like in general, like just you ask someone and they may not even know what asexual is, you know, or that they think it doesn't exist, etc. So to have that be a main character, it's not stigmatized, it's not, you know, anything, it's just like this genuine part of his character is super cool. And then there's also a couple other queer characters in the show, which are, again, like they happen to be gay. Like there's one who's a like indie film director named Kelsey, who's a lesbian, and she just happens to be a lesbian, like it's not her whole deal, which is also kind of nice to see. So I think Yeah, I think BoJack Horseman really is the one of the only, like, really good representation of queer people I've seen. And I guess, yeah, that was mostly negative, but in answer to your question of, like, how could it be improved, it feels like really simple things, like, just actually have queer actors play queer characters. You know, have more queer writers, producers, directors, etc., so you can really, like, make a story about queer people that are doing other things besides just, like, coming out or being hate crimed or dying or, like, constantly having sex, because there's more to just queer people than that. So I hope, yeah, just in a nutshell, like, it seems like a no-brainer, but of course it's, yeah, for some reason really difficult to do.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand the frustration, like, as a heterosexual woman, watching some shows, like, mm-hmm. I was watching Mrs. Maisel the other day, I don't know if you've watched it, and it makes me angry to see that some of the things, like, men were, yeah, allowed to say to women back then, or the things that they were able to do, and it's like, hey, yeah, that's not okay nowadays. And then, in one of my classes that I'm taking, I had to, mm-hmm. we're talking about advertising, and I decided to discuss, like, the sexualization, totally, of women in media. And, I mean, obviously, it was really uncomfortable for me when I was watching the video lecture, and it was talking about a young woman who, it was, mm-hmm. a used car commercial, and the male professor is going on about, oh, like, you know, they're talking about how this young woman, oh, she's barely 18 or whatever, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, that makes, yeah, you really uncomfortable, yeah, to hear things like that. It, you know, conversations, mm-hmm. need to change. Like, I don't think people approach conversations, yeah, correctly. On a different tangent, it's, you know, it's, people need to learn how to talk sometimes. It's really unfortunate because I feel like we look, mm-hmm. at everything in such a negative light, you know. Maybe that's not the, yeah, message they were trying to get across, you know. So I know that this podcast is meant to be for people to really learn and educate themselves and understand certain topics that we discuss. Mm-hmm. So I have just a couple more questions. So what does it mean to be gender expansive or non-binary, excuse me, and how is that different from identifying as transgender?
Sure, so that's kind of a big question, and I am a cis person, so I don't want to claim to be, like, an expert on this. But my understanding is that, honestly, like, to say transgender is a bit of an umbrella term along with non-binary. Some people may identify as both, but essentially it's kind of like a departure from the gender binary, meaning, you know, quote-unquote male, quote-unquote female. And there's a lot of, I don't want to throw in too much women's studies jargon into this, but essentially, yeah, there's many different examples. There's Western society, like colonized society, likes to pretend that there's just the two genders, which correlate to quote-unquote two sexes, male and female, women and men, which, you know, socially, scientifically, culturally, like, that's not really true. At least throw in, like, intersex folks, which is if you are born with, like, two different, quote-unquote, like, reproductive organs, so saying maybe, like, you're born female, but you may have, like, testes or something like that. So, anyway, that whole, just the existence of intersex people, like, throws in a wrench to the whole argument of the gender binary. So, and this feels like a bit of a tangent, but anyway, so to be trans or to be non-binary is, like I said, like, kind of rejecting these, like, gender norms, stereotypes, like, or even, like, biological, quote-unquote biological arguments, which aren't always true. And so there are some people who may choose to physically transition, you know, go with, like, gender-affirming surgeries, taking hormones. That, I think, is kind of what most people think of when they say transgender. You know, you may be, like, assigned female at birth or something, and then if the person is able to, they, or want to, they may transition to be quote-unquote like a male. And then there are also people who don't choose to do that. Some people are more androgynous, some people are not. So it's really, it's a very broad question, and if you haven't come into contact with kind of more, if you haven't come into contact with, like, trans or non-binary people, I would definitely suggest looking it up. There's Judith Butler wrote I'm not sure what it's called, but essentially she is a feminist women's studies, like kind of a basic theory thing, but she essentially argued that like gender is a performance that you do every single day to fit into roles. And so like reading something like that and kind of understanding that argument is a great like leaping off point to start to understand like being gender expansive, as you said. And it kind of goes on and on. I don't know how to put it in like a simple sentence, but definitely put some research out so you can understand. And if you would like to be allies to transgender or non-binary people, a great thing to start to do and to try to normalize is introducing yourself with your pronouns or asking people their pronouns so you don't misgender anyone. And or even if you do misgender someone, you know, just and they correct you, just apologize and move on. So for instance, like normally when I'm in Zoom calls or back when we could be in person, I'd be like, hey, I'm Val, I use she, her pronouns. You know, like, what are your pronouns? So that's one simple step that you could take if you want to be, if you're cis and you want to be an ally to gender, like queer or non-binary people.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really important that you bring up pronouns because even on my Zoom for school, I have my pronouns. Because it's really important, like you said, to ask people their pronouns. And when I engage in a conversation with someone, and especially nowadays when we're, you know, online and you want to get to know people, just kind of start off with that, like you said. It's like a form of or sign of respect. Yeah, definitely. You know? Okay. So another question for our listeners, what is the difference between sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression?
All of those things can be separate and sometimes they can be like together. But I would say, so sexual orientation or like sexuality are kind of synonymous. But essentially, that would be like if you're heterosexual, you're a lesbian, you're bisexual, pansexual, like all of those kind of things. So it can be, or asexual even, as I mentioned earlier. So it can be essentially like you're some type of attraction to whatever gender, you know, and it can be like romantic, it can be sexual. There's a bunch of different things that if you really like start to dig into like what attraction means, it just gets broader and broader. But yeah, so those would be like all the different like flags, you know, or that kind of thing. And that can be really important to some people. Like I'm identify as a lesbian and like I love being a lesbian and I think, you know, like saying the word lesbian is great and kind of getting into like quote unquote lesbian culture, like whatever that means to you. And so yeah, so like that when we're even talking about this, we're breaking away from the idea that like me as a woman has to like men, you know, in a romantic and sexual way, which like I don't for really either, but instead I like women, you know, in those ways, or whatever it may be. And then even if you get into like bisexual, pansexual, there's some discourse on those terms, but essentially like you're furthering that because now you're going into like, oh, I like non-binary people and I like trans people and I like women and I like men and et cetera, et cetera. So leading back to like gender identity, that sort of can go back to what we were talking about with like trans or like non-binary people. So that gender identity is different from like your quote unquote biological sex. Because even if you're like, say, assigned male at birth, like you could still identify as like a woman is like your gender, like you have a, you know? So it's, it gets a little tricky and it's very expansive and there's no one answer. But yeah, so your gender identity and then gender expression is how you, how you express that gender. And that can be a range of different things. You know, you just, think about people in your class or your work, you know, like we have this stereotypical idea of like what women should be like, or should look like. And then, you know, people can express it in different ways. Like for instance, like my hair, like I buzzed my head like a month ago, you know, like super short hair. And I don't always wear a bra and like I don't always dress quote unquote like a girl, but I'm still very much feel like a girl or feel like a woman. So yeah, they're all different things, I guess. And sometimes they're really strongly related and sometimes they're not. It just kind of depends on what gender and those things mean to a specific person.
Yeah, oh, thank you. I love that. And your hair looks awesome. It's so awesome. I think it's so important. This episode was extremely important, and I hope our listeners really will take this into account and educate themselves and try to be allies to the LGBTQ community. And I know I will be posting resources. Val, if you'd actually like to send me some resources that you think are, you know, I don't want to say better, but best for people such as myself who want to be allies to the LGBTQ community. And I will go ahead and post that on our Instagram and a website coming soon, hopefully, fingers crossed. So thank you so much, Val, for having this conversation with me. I know I learned a lot, and I'm hoping that our listeners did too.
Yes, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me, and for all those listeners, thank you for taking the time to listen.
Of course. So we will see you all back for the next episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Val. Thank you so much.